Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Rod Gragg, who is an author and an educator. And his latest book is called My Brother's Keeper, and it's all about Christians who risked all to protect Jewish targets of the Nazi Holocaust. In fact, that's the subtitle. Rod, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. Good to be with you.
Sure. Now, this time, January 2017, when this is being recorded, is actually the 75th anniversary of something very notorious. Tell us about that.
Well, it's called the Wannsee Conference, and a few weeks earlier in December, after the Japanese attacked the American forces at Pearl Harbor in that surprise attack that put America into the war, Hitler had declared war on the United States, and at that time, he decided that he would increase the persecution that he had overseen of Jews in Europe to the elimination of Jews, that the Jewish people would be annihilated. And a few weeks later, in January, 75 years ago, there was a conference of top-ranking Nazi officials at a very plush Berlin resort called Wannsee, and it would become infamous as the Wannsee Conference, and it was there that they decided that they would implement, how they would implement Hitler's vision for annihilating the Jewish people entirely in Europe, and they called it infamously the Final Solution.
Mm. By the way, for the anybody wondering what that Wannsee, what that word is like, it's W-A-N-S-E-E, I believe. And I remember one history professor, military history professor at Grove City College made the point that some of the Nazis, or at least one of them, had said, wow, Darwin would be so proud of us, you know, for advancing science in this way, in terms of dealing with human evolution.
Well, that was their view, that the Nazis were to build a master race, and that to do so they would eliminate people they considered to be subhuman, and the Jews were on the very top of the list because Hitler was so anti-Semitic. And others were involved as well. Anyone who was basically, and the list grew. It grew to include Christian pastors, anyone who opposed the Holocaust. And it was a horribly dark time in history. And, of course, there were 6 million Jews who were killed in the Holocaust. And what this book does is it depicts the life story, the profiles of 30 Christians in Europe who are members of what's called the Righteous Among the Nations, a designation by the State of Israel for people who helped Jews during the Holocaust. And these 30s were selected from that large body of folks as Christians of various denominations and various levels of faith, from the nominal to the devout, who risk everything and in some cases gave up everything to try to help the Jewish people at a time of persecution and the Holocaust.
And, of course, the Holocaust didn't kill just the 6 million Jews, although, of course, that was the largest single sub-victim, no question about it. But it systematically killed gypsies, hundreds of thousands of them, Slavs, many. In fact, we don't even know the exact number beyond the 6 million Jews, and that's why you don't often hear necessarily what those numbers were. Now, probably the most famous of these righteous Gentiles that you talk about, at least in evangelical circles, what I think would be Corrie ten Boom. And she and her family merit a chapter in your book. Tell us about Corrie ten Boom.
Right. Well, and many people are familiar with the ten Boom family and with Corrie ten Boom because she authored a book called The Hiding Place that was a bestseller around the world and was made into a motion picture by the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, a movie of the same name. It's done extremely well. And there is a chapter in the book on the Ten Boom family, and they had a longstanding relationship with the Jewish community in the city of Harlem in Holland. And when the Holocaust came, they took Jews into their home, and they were caught for doing that and for working with the Dutch resistance. And they were imprisoned, and almost all the family members who were involved died either in a concentration camp or in captivity or because of that. Corrie survived to write these books, and so her story is pretty well known. And there are a couple others, like Jan Karski, who may be known to some people, a Polish Christian who did much to try to alert the world to what was going on in the Holocaust. But most of the people in this book are unknown,
mm-hmm.
and they range from homemakers and diplomats, soldiers, German soldiers, an American soldier, a small girl, just a variety of people, a variety of situations and professions and different denominations. And the thing they have in common is that they were willing to risk everything to try to help the Jewish people, and many of them lost their lives doing so.
Mm. I understand.
But their stories,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, the stories, I'm sorry.
No, I have to.
And I said the stories are, the whole story, of course, is quite sobering, but the stories of these people and the Jewish people they were working with are quite inspirational and I think important for us to remember.
Okay, now I understand there was a Huguenot, meaning French Calvinist, village in the mountains in France, and there was a prominent pastor, I believe the name was Jan Peters, involved in this. Can you tell us about that, saving Jews?
Well, right, there are actually a couple of those that kind of fall into that category, Andre Trumke, but there was a village. The book details a church where people risk everything, an entire village at one point in France and in other places, but the one you're referring to in particular was a village that was near the Swiss border, and it was made up of Huguenots, and those were people, a minority of evangelical Christians in France who historically had suffered great persecution themselves centuries before, and so they had a real heart for people who were being persecuted, and they were known to open their homes to people in need, and so Jewish people began to go to this village, and under the influence of this pastor, these villagers took in people and who were Jewish and rescued them, and the name of the village was Le Chaumont-sur-Ligon, which was over right at the Swiss border, and it was up in the hill country near the an area where people could move into, had some choices of where they could flee, but most of them, some of them came there just to go somewhere else, but many of them came there and stayed there, and the people in this village who were predominantly Huguenots protected them and helped them. Now, you also mentioned Joseph Peters. He was the pastor of a church in a little village in Belgium called Compline-Lepont, and he began to take in Jews after the Nazi forces invaded and conquered Belgium, and he also worked with the Belgian resistance, and he was known as the kind of the smiling minister because he always had this cheerful, positive attitude in all that he did, and he helped many people, and he would Jews would come to his church, and then he would place them with members of his congregation out in the countryside. And eventually, he was caught and was imprisoned. And he took that same faith and spirit and put it to work in prison, and became a great encouragement to those who were there waiting to be executed. And then eventually, his time came, as the story tells, and he gave his life up as well. So there are any number of folks in here who have just remarkable stories of how they reached out to people. One of them that took me by surprise was a German officer named Max Leidke, and he was in the German Wehrmacht, which was the regular German army. And the Holocaust was overseen by the Schutzstaffel, the SS, which began as Hitler's private bodyguard in 1929 and then grew in size to hundreds of thousands of troops involved in the German army and their own divisions and also overseeing the Holocaust as well as protecting Hitler. And the regular German army was also caught up in the Holocaust. Hitler saw to that, but there were some members in uniform who really hated the Nazis, and they hated what they were doing, and one of them was a guy named Max Leidke. He was a middle-aged officer. He had been a journalist who had lost his job because of his opposition to the Nazis. He was a veteran of the German Army in World War I, and so he was sent back into service and found himself posted to a city in Poland where there was a large population of Jewish people that the Germans had put into what they called a ghetto. And he learned one morning that the SS was coming to get them, and he knew that the SS would take them out and kill them, and there were thousands of them. And so he had a bridge barricaded coming into the city and put a machine gun, a heavy machine gun, on top of it. And when the SS arrived, he wouldn't let them across.
Okay, wait. Let's put this in context. Here you're talking about a German officer in the German army who, knowing that the SS was on their way to kill a bunch of thousands of Jewish people in Poland in this one particular spot, he actually had his soldiers and armaments blocking the SS from being able to reach the Jews. Is that right?
That's right. He was in the regular German army, and he personally just disliked the Nazis, and he knew other officers around him and did, including his commanding officer, and so he knew what could happen to him and what would likely
like
happen to him.
Like signing his death warrant, you know.
Well, he was, and he and another officer, a junior officer under him, oversaw this construction of this barricade on the bridge, and they put up a machine gun nest on it mounted with heavy machine guns, and they told the SS officer that he couldn't cross. And he was coming to get the Jews, and they said they were their our laborers, and you can't have them. And so the SS officer said he was going to order his men to fire on them and force their way through the barricade, and Leitke told them that he would open fire on the SS.
Wow.
So the SS backed down, and they pulled away. Now they came back.
Yeah.
And they came back with full authority, and they got almost all of the Jews eventually, and then the officers who had opposed them, you know, faced a really terrible fate, as did Major Leitke.
Yeah. As you were putting this book together and you considered different people to include, perhaps you thought about Pope Pius XII. I know sometimes critics of him say, oh, you know, this guy didn't stand up against Hitler or whatever, but in reality, it's my understanding he saved more Jews than Oskar Schindler did, and that leads me to another name, Oskar Schindler. Did you consider either of those for your book, or how? What was the criterion you used? Was it something that they had to say something specifically? I'm doing this because of my love for Jesus, my love of the Christian faith.
Well, I was looking for Christians who chose because of their faith to try to oppose the Holocaust. And I was looking for people of kind of a range of people. And the Pope, as you mentioned, was really controversial because he kind of made a deal at the beginning of the war with Hitler to try to protect the Catholic Church in Germany. And Hitler, of course, didn't abide by the deal anyway. But there's new historical information that's kind of come out to show that the Pope behind the scenes was trying to do some things and sometimes in some ways to try to protect Jews and oppose the Holocaust. But most of that opposition came from the personal choices that Catholic priests, pastors made in their own locations to try to protect the Jews, and some of them paid for it with their lives. And there's also there's a chapter in there that deals with different circumstances that like that. But I think the range here goes from there was a Chinese diplomat, Feng Shang-ho, who decided that he saw Hitler take over Austria in 1938, early in this period, and the Jews were being persecuted, and he realized what was going on, and he began to issue visas to them so they could flee the country. And so the Nazis were really trying to watch him and figure out what he was up to, and his own Chinese government didn't like him doing that because at the beginning of the war, Chiang Kai-shek and the Chinese government were allies with Germany. But he did it anyway, and eventually he saved the lives of more than 6,000 Jews.
Wow.
So that's on one end of the scale. And then on the other end of the scale, the book tells the story of Anna M., who was a 13-year-old girl, a European girl, who met another teenage girl who was Jewish on the street begging for food because her families were forced laborers. Who were brought in to clear rubble from the bombing before they were sent to death camps. And she befriended this little girl and gave her her lunch, and then every day would meet her and bring her food. And at one point, the girl told her that her older sister had been injured in the work by falling rubble and had been taken to a hospital, which turned out to be a hospital for the Schutzstaffel, for the SS, those black uniformed troops that oversaw the Holocaust. And so sooner or later, they were going to figure out she was Jewish, and they knew what would happen. And so this little 13-year-old volunteered that she would go and try to get her out of the hospital. And so she did. She went to the hospital and very politely but assertively gave the name of the patient and said she was there to pick her up and take her home and treat her at home. And so without any questions, they discharged the little girl, and two of them walked past the SS and out the door.
Oh, man. That's just amazing. We're basically out of time, but the story, I mean, this book is just filled with these kinds of heartwarming stories during such a dark and evil time. Thank you so much, Rod Gregg, for writing this. Again, the name of the book is My Brother's Keeper. Rod Gregg's last name is spelled G-R-A-G-G. The book is available at Amazon.com and all kinds of other places. Rod, thank you, and God bless you now.
Thanks, Jerry. My pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye now.